First of all, thank you, Ms. Uden, for the opportunity. It is it's a pleasure to be here. It's a particular kind of ambiance, I guess, you're going for. Let me begin as follows. It's hard to sit here right now and not think of Tisha B'Av. I want to begin with a short, I guess, anecdote or Dvar Torah that hopefully can frame our discussion a little bit. Many of you know that a couple of years ago there was a massacre in Harnov, and unfortunately there were several tzaddikim, exceptionally righteous people, who were murdered while davening. One of the people that was killed is, again, I'm sure many of us know it, was Moshe Twersky. Moshe Twersky was a Rebbe in Yeshivas Toras Moshe and a brother of Rebbe Meir Twersky. Twersky spent his summers in Tzvi Kollel, is Rosh Shiva in YU. I went to be Menachem Avol with Twersky. He was sitting Shiva in Harnof in his brother's house. So I went one night to be Menachem Avol, to visit him as he was there, as he was sitting Shiva mourning over his brother. It was a little bit of an intense place, obviously. The Twerskys, following the minhag of certain briskers, when they sit Shiva, don't sit on a low chair. They sit on the floor. So it's already a little bit of a more intense kind of a feel. It was obviously relatively packed, and there was a line of people for the different mourners to wait until you got up to them. So I finally got up to my turn to even off the hovel with Forsy. And of course he said to me, we spent a lot of summers together. I actually, as a kid, at this Vicola, I flew for a bunch of summers. It was done alphabetically. So as a Turetsky next to Twersky, I had many, many flights sitting right next to him. I have a bit of a relationship with him. So if Twersky asked me if I ever learned by his brother, I said no. However, there's one Torah I once heard from Rebbe, one Torah I heard from Rav Twersky, and named his brother. So if Twersky said, it's prohibited, many of us know, for an avil, for a person mourning, to learn Torah. So if Twersky said, by any chance can you hint to me the Torah that you heard from the name of my brother, without actually saying over the Torah? It's usher for me to learn Torah now, so can you hint it without actually saying anything real? So I said to Rav Twersky the following 2-3 week time period, same pasuk. Okay. God is in the What was the Dvar Torah that I heard named his brother? An incredibly relevant one, I believe, for right now. There are 2-3 week time periods in the Jewish calendar. A 3-week time period that takes place, we just finished yesterday, beginning Shiva Aser B'Tammuz, ending on Tisha B'Av. There's another 3-week time period that Be'ezra Hashem Yisbarach, and hopefully in about a month or so, we will be beginning, or closer to, I guess, 6 weeks from now, which is Rosh Hashanah, all the way up to Simchas Torah. Another 3-week time period. And if Twersky's brother quoted from one of the early students of the Baal Shem Tov, Pinchas Karitzer, an amazing, amazing insight. And the insight is one that I know for me is relevant every year, Tisha B'Av. And it's very relevant when Tisha B'Av ends. The insight was as follows. There is a single pasuk. There is one pasuk that we read, that we recite, at the culmination, at the conclusion of both of those 3-week time periods. The time period, Tisha B'Av, time period towards Simchas Torah. That pasuk is the following. Ata haresa ladas ki Hashem hu ha'elokim ein od melvado. The recognition that Hashem, Hu HaElokim, that God is the master of this world, Ein Od Melvado, there is no other God, there's nothing in which God plays no role, Ein Od Melvado. We begin Simchas Torah night, we celebrate Simchas Torah, we take out the Sifrei Torah from the Arum, and we begin to say, Atah HaReisa Ladas, and it was yesterday's Torah reading. Yesterday's Torah reading was also Parshas Ve'Etzanan, that pasuk. And if Twersky quoted the name of his brother, quoting the Pinchas Karitzer to the following very, very powerful and very beautiful insight. There are two very, very different ways to come to a recognition of Hashem Hu HaElokim Ein Od Melvado. There are two ways a person can come to the realization, that a person can be aware of the fact that a person can strengthen their own connection with Ribono Shel Olam. One way of doing that is through times of sorrow. That sometimes in moments of mourning and moments of pain, sometimes in challenging times, the way that we come about to recognize the presence of Ribbono Shel Olam in those moments, in those times of sorrow, in those times of challenges, specifically in those moments, we're able to come to a certain deepening, a certain kind of an appreciation. It's always an odd thing during the year where I teach. So there are guys who come back right before Pesach. The Shana Aleph guys in the yeshiva go to Poland. So it's always an awkward question when people come back from Poland. Say to them, how was it? The word they want to say is awesome. They want to say, oh my God, it was amazing. But it's weird to say that about Auschwitz. So there's like a very awkward kind of a, like, how do I say it was like the best week of my life? In a way which is, because sometimes in those moments where you're encountering tragedy, where you encounter pain, sometimes in those moments a person can deepen their relationship with Hashem. And sometimes in those moments a person can come to a realization of tremendous, tremendous inspiration. But there's another track. And that track is not the track of the three weeks we ended yesterday. It's not the track of sitting in a dark room. It's the track of a Hashanah all the way up to Simchas Torah. Where when it comes to Sukkot, described in the Chumash as Zman Simchaseinu, it's a time period of joy, it's a time period of excitement, it's a time period where people are again experiencing a certain positive emotional experience, where what you have is something else. You come to a recognition of the Ribbono Shel Olam not in times of sorrow, but rather in times of joy. That what's more exciting than being at an event in which you're so happy, in which everything is coming together, in which sometimes in the beginning I begin and things are a little bit hard, I'm a little bit nervous, and suddenly things start to all click. I went on a club this summer, and I went with a lot of friends. And in the beginning it was very difficult for me. In the beginning, I was going down into the Chadar Ochel cafeteria, lunchroom, whatever it is that you call it. And as you're going down that first day, I have my food and I'm a little bit nervous for where I sit. And sometimes in those moments, what happens for many of us is the person experiences a little bit, you turn and you daven sometimes. Hashem, can you please make this a little bit smoother? It's hard right now. The Brisker Rav, they say, if you watched him, he would utter short tefillos all the time. He would utter short prayers all the time. Because there are always moments of davening. And sometimes the beginning of an experience, so a person can feel like it's a little bit challenging. And then when things start to click a little bit, suddenly I know where to go, and I've made friends. And my roommates, who I didn't really know in the beginning, it started to come together a little bit more. I mean, Madrichot, in the beginning, I wasn't really sure what's that kind of relationship like, that suddenly now things start to click a little bit more, where now it feels better. And now there's this Atah Reis Ladas Kashem Hel Kamina Mavado, where it's important to remember, it's important to reflect, and to be able to say also, to utter a short tefillah of a thank you, and to come to recognition of their bonus shalom in times like that. This is a time of transition. Time of transition, I believe, on three levels. It's transition on the Jewish calendar. Tisha B'Av is over. It's done. None of those minhagim are still around. Whatever we kept last night a little bit is totally over now. And suddenly we're able to shift to an experience of nechama, to an experience of comfort and joy. I am sure, if no one has spoken about it yet, someone over the next couple of days will talk about the question that many of us, you know, intuitively may feel, about how we go from a Tisha B'Av to Shabbos Nachum, where nothing has changed. There is no Mikdash. It's the exact same as it was 3 days ago, but yesterday I was mourning, and now suddenly I'm experiencing joy. Be that as it may, it is a time of transition. Things are not the same as it's supposed to be. Transition on the Jewish calendar. Some of us may know, if not maybe many of us, it's an amazing, it's a very powerful time of transition in the Olam HaYeshivos, in the yeshiva curriculum, in the yeshiva schedule, in many places in America and Eretz Yisrael. Tisha B'Av is the last day of school. My son goes to a decently intense elementary school in which there is school almost every day of the year. Almost every day of the year. It's a bit of a scam, they say that. It's optional a lot of the days. And no one goes on those days. But in the marketing, it's every day of the year. But even in their world, Tisha B'Av is off. Tisha B'Av is the last day. And in his school, so up until Tisha B'Av, it looks more or less like... like that moment of delusion where, like, are they clapping for me? And the answer is no.
That's obvious.
Yeah, for sure. In the middle, it happens sometimes. But it's for his school, up until yesterday, there were more or less regular classes, and in many yeshivas, more or less regular, and suddenly comes Tisha B'Av, it's vacation time, Ben Hazmanim. And it's a time of transition, not only in the Jewish calendar, but for many, many Jews, this is a time period in which things shift a little bit. I imagine for many of us in this room, we are at least beginning to think a bit about transition. We're not there yet. We have, when do you go home? Sunday is the last day? So we go home on Sunday, and hopefully it was an incredibly eventful, inspiring, and meaningful summer. And on the one hand, you don't want to think too much about going home too early. Then it colors in a certain way the last week. On the other hand, it's impossible not to. And a time period of transition for some of us, of a transition from being here in the summer, accomplishing an enormous amount, to suddenly going back home, to suddenly going to a different kind of environment and culture. It's a different kind of transition, but this is a time period undoubtedly of transitions. It's a time period of a transition, again, from an atar reis ladas, enol milvadu, that comes from time to sorrow, to a more positive, happy kind of a switch. To a more eventful, to a more positive kind of an experience. What I want to talk about is something very, very simple tonight. I want to talk about inspiration. I don't think I want to be inspiring. Maybe. Well, I want to talk about inspiration. It's a different conversation. One of the interesting things about working in the yeshiva during the year and spending my summers in MTSY Kollel is that you get to watch people as they get inspired. There are obviously some of us have a harder time feeling something. Some of us have a harder time feeling inspired. But almost anyone, if you sit them down and you engage in a real conversation, so we'll be honest about the fact that at some point in their year in Israel, at some point in their year in Eretz Yisrael, or at some point in their over their summer, experienced moments that they found to be profound, moments they found to be extremely meaningful. Many of us, I hope, experienced those yesterday. I mean, I hope you experienced them, you know, today, but yesterday for sure with the Tisha B'Av. And to be able to experience that, different people, and this is what's so amazing, get inspired in very, very different ways. The Sfatan has to make this observation. There is not a single recipe for inspiration which works for every single person. There are people that get inspired through music. I am not in that category of person. But there are people who go to a kumzitz or a concert, and they leave and they say, or listen to something on their phone, and they say, it was moving. There are people that get moved and inspired through stories. People get moved and inspired through witnessing acts of chesed. There are people that get moved and inspired by performing acts of chesed. There are people that get inspired by being around people that seem to live inspired lives. But there is no single recipe for inspiration. But I imagine at some point, many of us over the last 5 weeks or so have experienced a moment of inspiration. So I want to share with you three or four thoughts about that. Three or four thoughts about inspiration in general, and hopefully to shift in a meaningful way to what a person does with that in a way which can help inspire others also. Let me just begin by noting the following. Not to make it awkward. There's an amazing comment of the Shem Yishmuel. And let's just begin with that. The Gemara tells us, we know even in Chumash, that there are two parshios that are juxtaposed one to the other. The Torah describes the laws of a Nazir, the Nazir, who decides they're going to refrain entirely from eating, from drinking wine. They're not going to come in contact with the dead at all. And they're also not going to shave or get haircuts. There are even people, my grandmother lives in Lakewood, so every time in America I visit my grandmother, and she knows this. I always lie to her a little bit about what time I'm getting there. She's in her 90s, and you can't show up early. It's like a very, very big deal with her. I'm very, very close with her, but if you'd say 10:15, you really have to show up at 10:15. Like 10:10 is terrible, and 10:20 she's like calling the cops. It's very intense. So I always tell her, hi, Bobby, I'm going to be there at about 10, or I'll be there, say, at 10, and I plan on getting there by 9:30. If I go early, so I always try to go, and I go to one of the local farm stores. It's an amazing store. So there was a small kuntris, a small sefer that came out a couple of years ago. It was all about the halachas of a person that mistakenly accepted upon themselves to become a nazir. That's a bad move. It's a bad move. Mistakenly accepted upon himself to become a Nazir, and whether the person is locked in, do they have a way out? Nazir, you can't stop this. So the no haircut, no shaving, no grapes, no wine, you sort of can't stop it. One of Rav Kook's great Talmidim, Rav David Cohn, was a Nazir. He actually became a Nazir, I believe, after he was engaged. He was separated from his wife during the war for a couple of years, and when they got back together, it was a, surprise, I'm a Nazir kind of moment. It's probably not good on the dating or marriage advice. But that was, Nazir is a very real thing. And the Torah describes Nazir right next to its description of the laws of Sota. A woman who potentially committed adultery, a woman whose husband questions the way that she behaved, and again, whether she committed adultery. And the Torah describes a very intense process of Sota, what you do. You take the woman, you bring her to Yerushalayim. It's a very embarrassing ordeal. The Gemara of Zion describes at length. It's a very, very embarrassing ordeal what she undertakes. And the Gemara asks a question. Rashi quotes it as Perush al Torah, which is, why are those two things next to each other? Why place Sota next to Nazir? What's the connection at all? In fact, for many, and here's an important insight, Sota and Nazir are really a study in contrast. Sota is all about a person who engages too much in the physical world, a person whose quest for physicality led them to inappropriate areas. And Nazir is the opposite, a person who refrained almost entirely. I know, God, you said wine's okay. I don't want wine. I know you said it's okay for me to look a certain kind of a way, to be a bit more clean-shaven, to get haircuts. I want to remove myself from this world. And the Gemara says, well, why would you compare them? They are so, so different. And the Gemara says, I'm sure many of us are aware of this line, because kol ha-roeh sota b'kol kulo, yazir atzmo min hayayin. That if a person witnesses a sota, the response of that is supposed to be, yazir atzmo min hayayin. If I see, I'm in Yerushalayim. So I don't know about in Mechlela, then it's by Kol, we're in Yerushalayim. After when I say it, doesn't get a cheer. When we go into, we go to the old city all the time, and you walk into Yerushalayim, and imagine the episode. Imagine, there's I think one place in Chazal in which they describe a real Sota episode. You walk in, you see the Sota episode, and you see a woman who potentially cheated on her husband, and you see this entire ordeal, which is going to lead to either punishing her or, if she did not do anything wrong, it's going to lead to a strengthening of her relationship with her husband. And she's being embarrassed right there. It's a very intense ordeal. So you walk in and you see it. It says the Gemara, Kol Roa Sota Bikul Kula, Yazir Atom in Hayayin. If you witness that experience, if you see a woman who is embarrassed like that, accept upon yourself to become a Nazir. How come? Because of that study in contrast. Because if you see someone who was so involved in the physical world, if you see the downside of what could be, the best response is take a step back and say, I don't want any of this. I'm not interested. Yazir atzmo min hayayin, don't engage in it at all. The Shemi Shmuel, Sakhatov Rebbe, has what is a very simple question. There are a lot of questions. The Nesiva Shalom and Rav Chaim Kanievsky asked one question, which is, I thought it's bad, it sounds like, in one context, to be a Nazir. And here the Gemara is telling us that maybe you should become a Nazir. I thought that was your chote, the Torah tells us. Why are we encouraging it? That's one question. Shem Yishmuel asks something else. Who needs the chizuk? Who needs the chizuk? Who needs the... Someone said it's over recently, correct? Someone said it's over or no? A bunch of like smiling here. Okay. There's a... Ask Shem Yishmuel the following question.
Who should be Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin?
If you would have asked me if there's one person that should not need to be Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin, I would have told you it's a person that saw it.
That the one that saw the experience, shouldn't they be good? Shouldn't the Gemara say, if you didn't see it, so the Kula, then be Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin? Because if you saw the experience, wasn't that so powerful? Why did you have to accept upon yourself to be a Nazir? Shouldn't that have been good enough if you witnessed it? Shouldn't it have transformed you and changed you?
The people that weren't in Yerushalayim, if you weren't in Michal in the summer, and if you're back in America, and if you're there, and you don't have a certain experience, so you should accept certain things upon yourself. Why are those who went through the experience, why those who witnessed it, who saw how Roa sowed the Bikul Kula, why do they have to be Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin? And says the Shem Yishmuel, an amazing insight. Says the Shem Yishmuel, one of the trickiest things One of the trickiest things that could ever happen is you have a person who experiences a moment of inspiration. What happens when you experience inspiration? So says the Shemi Shmuel, something very honest. We all have those moments, and they usually go away. We have those moments, and it's very useful, but sometimes, a little bit later, it goes away. It's like, I remember Motzi Tisha B'Av. Motzi Yom Kippur is always like an odd time, because in the yeshiva that I'm at, I think most yeshivas, Yom Kippur is more or less the end of the first Aman, and there's vacation time. So Yom Kippur through the end of Sukkot, you're entirely on vacation. Yom Kippur is really intense. And the end of Yom Kippur is especially intense. Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. This base medrash, they say, has an amazing, amazing davening on Yom Kippur, which I'm sure is inspiring, and I'm sure it's intense. At the end, it's very, very powerful. And sometimes you go back. You go back to your dorm room right after Yom Kippur. So I'm learning in Reshit, I'm learning in here, and I walk down from here, and I go down to my dorm room. And it's very powerful. And what happens, says the Shemi Shmuel, not in this exact example, is what does it take? What does it take? All you need is one person to shift gears, and that moment goes away entirely. All you need is that one person. It can happen Tisha B'Av night. Tisha B'Av night can be very intense. I'm hearing Eicha be read. There are keynotes. I don't know what the program is here. There may be a kumzitz. And I come back to my room, and I come back with a certain focus. And there's like those one or two people that just didn't get the memo. They didn't realize, like, no, this is not the joking around time. It's not joking around time. I saw one guy, and so I called. He's like, he didn't get the memo. It was like the in-between Shabbos to Tisha B'Av time. And you just like saw it on his, he was like, it's very intense. Everyone's there in the Shabbos clothes, and everyone's going up to Shal Shadis, and it's very focused. There's one guy there who's like, he's like, didn't get it. He didn't get it. And sometimes all you have to have is be around that one person, and suddenly what was a very inspiring time, it just ends. Just ends a little bit. And says the Shemi Shmuel, the way that inspiration lasts, the way that you make sure it lasts, is when you witness something powerful, do something. Do something. Haroa sota pekukula. If you see a moment that moves you and says, you know what, I think I'm also too involved in the physical world. I'm not a sota, but I think I'm a little bit too involved in things. Do something. Don't make the mistake of assuming that because you saw it, that that's considered to be good enough. If I experience inspiration, I have to respond by doing something. The Ramban, very famously, in a sefer called Hamuna V'Habitachon, writes that very powerfully. That if a person experiences something meaningful, so the question is, what is your next move? What is your next move? What are you going to do to make sure that it has some actual physical Kabbalah, something differently right now? Because otherwise, it doesn't become concrete, so things can go away. Things can go away a little bit. I want to share with you a second thought. from New Rochelle. I went to TBC for high school, and then I went on NTCY Colo since, I've missed 2 years since I was in 10th grade. 1 year after my 12th grade, and 1 year about 8 years ago, my wife and I made Aliyah. That summer was not going to be an NTCY Colo summer. It was a little bit too hectic. But other than that, I've only missed 2 years. I remember an amazing moment that there's a phrase in Guy's Yeshivas. Do you know it? T4? We know this phrase or no? Yeah. T4 is like, you say something which is like a little bit like too frum about yourself. So there's like, it's in a couple of yeshivas. Like people respond by like T4, like therefore what? So it's like a thing people enjoy calling out others on statements sometimes. But if I make a statement, I'm like, oh, wow. I get back to my room and I say, I'm really tired. Like, I don't know. I think I learned for 11 hours today straight. I'm really tired. So I would say to me, like, T4. Settle down, Tzadik. So if you, it's a phrase that gets dropped sometimes. I'm going to say a T4 story about myself. If any of you want to call me out on that, I already did, so it won't be meaningful. This is a story. I was in 10th grade on NTCY Colo. I've never told over in Colo. So interesting. I was in NTCY Colo, and I was like, I don't know, sweet, fine kid. And there was, my older brother had a friend who was a madrech. And I was hanging in the dorms, it was like 11 o'clock at night. And he said to me, so do you want to learn at some point this summer? So it's really hard to say no in moments like that. So I said, sure. And then he said, how about now? I'm like, how about not? But he was like, no, how about now? I'm like, what do you mean now? He's like, well, the base measure is still open. Correct. I think it's a 24/7 phenomenon. Do you want to learn now? And I said, okay, sure. And we learned every night until like 11. I never would have initiated that on my own. It really just came because I was too embarrassed to say no, and I'm indebted to him out of Yom HaZeh because of that experience, which was an unbelievable learning experience. And one of the things I believe we learned Gemara Makos, and we also learned, I believe, if I remember correctly, Sichos Moshe Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Chaim Shmulevitz was Rashiv of Mir. It's an amazing, amazing Sichot that he gave in the Mir Yeshiva. And I remember at the end of that summer, I bought a Sichos Moshe. I grew up in a house, my parents' house is a biased Mulei Sfarim Mamish. I grew up in a house with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volumes of Sfarim. There's a deal in the 1970s, I think, if you would write a check for like $200 a year to Mossad HaRav Kook and Machon Yerushalayim, two of the most popular publishing houses, they would send you all the Sfarim they published that year. My father's been doing that for like 50 years, 40-something years. So every year, I think the same $200, which is an amazing thing. So every year, we always get these, like, and in general, I go to the house, I split the farm. But it was a big moment for me because it was one of the first farms that I bought. Sichos Moshe Chaim Shmulevitz, it was a real moment for me. I remember I came home and I landed, the morning that I landed on that flight after 10th grade. And I remember I was sitting in the house, got home, went to shul, one of those early morning flights where like you... It lands like 5:30 in the morning in New York. Okay, it was great. And I came home. And I remember it was a very powerful time. Because I remember thinking, what do I do right now? What do I do right now? And I had two options at the time. There was no smartphones or cell phones. That wasn't an option. I didn't have my own email address till my Shana Aleph. I was like, what am I going to do? So I had two options. One was SportsCenter. That's the... Sports highlights. I used to be on ESPN from like 8 in the morning until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, like the same show every half hour. And I used to watch it like the same show every half hour. So that was one option. The other option was to open that safer. And I remember, and if I'm looking back at moments in life, I know you can T4 me when you want. But at that moment, if you're looking at identifying moments that matter, it was not the most important smooth or time to web that I ever learned. I don't think. I'll be honest, I'm not even sure I remember which one it was. But what I do know was that choice at that moment was a choice that I was making. The inspiration that was there was going to actually transition into something real. That the second I got home, one of the first things I was going to do, it was 6:45 in the morning, whatever it was, I was going to open a safer and read it at the kitchen table. And that was a transformative moment. I can't say I never watched SportsCenter again. I did. But what I can say was that I've opened up Sichos Moshe many times in my life. And sometimes that initial haroah sotapik kula, if you see something that moves you a little bit, so yazar asim nayayin, so accept something upon yourself. And sometimes the earlier you do it, the more meaningful it can be. Next step, if we're leading, we'll go with something from Chaim Shmulevitz. It's a very beautiful Torah. You know what? It's an awesome Torah right now. It's tucked away in a footnote in an article. It is Ladati, one of the best Torahs I've ever seen in my life. Really? I think so. About 3 or so years ago, Eitam Henkin. How many of us know the name Eitam Henkin? Eitam Henkin was about 31 years old. He was an indescribably impressive Talmud Chacham, 31. He published Sfarim on Hilchos Shabbos. He published a Sefer on the history of Rav Kook. Published a Sefer, recently one came out in the Aruch HaShulchan. Published a Sefer on bugs in food, where Rav Nevenzahl wrote about Eitam Henkin. He was in his 20s at the time. Rav Nevenzahl, Chief Rabbi Yerushalayim, with Talmud Mumma book of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Nevenzahl wrote, I read your Kuntres and I agree with everything you wrote Halach Lemaisa. I'm sorry I'm referring to it as a Kuntres, as just a booklet, but Rashi on Gemara is also called a Kuntres. It was a very impressive work. Eitam Henkin and his wife, Nama, were killed in a terrorist attack. On Sukkot, indescribably hard. I got very into his writings. I had next to my bed I remember I came home from a Simchas Beis HaShoeva, and my wife said to me, there was bad news. I could tell on her face something happened. And she said, there was a couple that was killed. Terasak, I said, I don't want to know who. I don't have the koach. Like, I don't have, like, sometimes you're not in a great place. She said, no, it's something that I think you're into his Torah. Etam Henkin, I had a book that was talking about his Torah, Dafka, and I connected to my bed. I remember when I found out about it. Etam Henkin has a Torah which is an unbelievable, unbelievable insight. It's an unbelievable insight which is tucked away in a footnote in an article he wrote about Rabbi Akiva. He's in his 20s when he wrote this article. Listen to this Torah, it's awesome. Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara tells us, Rabbi Akiva grew up, many of us know, without a strong background in Torah learning. Rabbi Akiva ends up marrying a very holy and righteous woman who encourages him to go learn in yeshiva. And the Gemara that Suvis describes for us how Rabbi Akiva goes to learn in yeshiva, and he learned in yeshiva for 12 years. At the end of the 12 years, he comes back home. He overhears his wife having a conversation, and his wife says, if Akiva wants to go back for another 12 years, I'm fine with that. Also, Rabbi Akiva automatically straight away goes back to yeshiva for 12 more years, and he learned for 24 years. The Gemara describes at the end of that time, he comes back home, and he's Rabbi Akiva, Echad Migadoli Hador, one of the greats of the generation. There are a lot of questions on that Gemara. One is the Reb Chaim Shmulevitz question, recorded earlier, which I'm not going to speak about, which is, why didn't he go in and say hello? How about thank you? Seems like an appropriate response. That's one question. It has to do with Reb Chaim Shmulevitz about consistency, which is also part of this discussion. But Eitan Henkin had to ask a different question, which is, how can you learn for 12 years? Why 12? Why 12? Like, why was that the amount of time? I know why you would learn for a year. Okay. Some go for the Shana Bet thing. I got that. But why 12? And he offers an unbelievable read of that Gemara. He suggests the following. The Gemara tells us that at what age do you start teaching a kid in school? At what age do you start teaching a kid in school? So the Gemara in Masechet Ksubos tells us that there are discussions about exactly when, but for many children about the age of 6. Is when you first begin school. Times of the Rishonim, it was about 4 years old. That's where the minhag comes from, some of us may know. Times of the Rishonim about putting honey on the letters. That comes from the Rabbeinu Bechai and the Rokeach and others. But times of the Gemara, about 6 years old. When do you think they stopped learning? So Etam Henkin makes the following guess. I would suspect in the time of Chazal, they would stop learning around the time that they had to support themselves. Okay. At what age did they have to support themselves? Ben Shmona Asar L'Chuppah. They were getting married at the age of 18. So I would guess, he suspects, that people learn from the age of 6 to 18, which is how many years? 12. Good job. So why did Rabbi Akiva initially go for 12 years? What was he doing in his initial 12 years? Catching up. First grade, second grade, third grade, all the way until 12th grade. That's all he was doing. He was catching up for all the years he missed. What did his wife mean when she said, even if he goes back for 12 more years, I'm okay with that? Why was she encouraging him to go back? What was the message she was trying to give over to Rabbi Akiva? Suggest Etam Henkin, the message was very, very simple. I'm not looking for someone that has a relationship with Torah. I'm not looking for someone whose relationship in Avodas Hashem is the same as everyone else's. The fact that you've checked all the boxes, that you learned for the 12 years as everyone else, that you've been Yotzei your Chiyuv, that you fulfilled your obligation, that's not good enough. That's not what I want. The culture that we want is someone that's more ambitious. The culture we want is someone that isn't just clocking time from first grade to 12th grade. We want people that are going to be doing more. Akide Kaf, his wife said, even if you want to double it up, it's fine. I want something radically, radically different. 12 years is not enough. 12 years is not enough. That Torah is a very powerful Torah for the following reason. It's very easy to do that which is standard in our culture. It's very easy to do that which is standard for where we come from. Making the choice, I would imagine, for many of you to come here this summer, was already a choice that we make, which is part of the second 12 years. It's not standard. To start in first grade and go to 12th grade, those 12 years, that is standard in our culture, unless you're from Montreal, my wife is, in which case you're only going until grade 11. However, for the vast majority of us, I suspect 12 years is a standard amount. Sedeitam Henkin, there's nothing as powerful as a person that learns more than that. Nothing as powerful as a person who devotes Hashem goes above and beyond that which is just accepted and that which is totally standard. If you can go more, that's a powerful statement. Inspiration, we may have all felt. One Torah of inspiration is learning how to take inspiration and do something with it automatically. You come home and you open up, that's it. You come home and you perform that act of chesed. You come home and even though normally I wasn't as machpin in certain davening, now I'm going to daven and I'm going to say certain things in a way which can be more powerful. That I come home and I transform it to something practical. But there's something else also. And that is to have the attitude which inspiration can give us. One thing inspiration does is it tells us you can do more and you should do more. It is not sufficient just to do whatever you can to get by. That part of what we need is to be able to push. Part of what we need is to have a culture of ambition. A culture of ambition. I don't know if this slot is supposed to be more story, more Torah. Anyway, what's supposed to be? A little bit of everything? What am I supposed to do? Whatever. Anything's good? Okay. I opened up speaking with about something from Mayor Tversky. I'll give you something else from Mayor Tversky that was very powerful. My wife and I met with him last week, a week and a half ago, for over an hour. It was an amazing experience. He's an incredibly wise person. I don't know if he spoke here in Michal at all. An incredibly wise person. And we had a couple of Hina questions. One of the things he was very encouraging of has to do with having a home in which you have things in your home that you do that go above and beyond. That you have things that you do in your own religiosity and you create a culture in your home where it isn't only about, did I do enough? But it's about, can I do more? Can I do more? The level of religious ambition. The level of standards. That one of the things which is so powerful is to be able to explore, how do we create a culture of more? Inspiration does that for us. Inspiration can move us in a certain kind of way that to do more, the Eitam Henkin Torah, the extra 12 years, that 12 more, be above and beyond the normal schooling, that's a culture. That's a culture that we're really going for. I want to share with you one more Torah, and I'll end with a Maisa, and hopefully that can be helpful. There's a tzaddik who, tzaddik HaKohen of Lublin. We're a sefer called Tikkus HaTzaddik. He was a very, very wild thinker. It's very sad. His life is a very sad life. Tzaddik HaKohen died in 1902. He passed away, unfortunately, there were fertility issues. He passed away without any children. And his Sfarim are named, many of his Sfarim are named as references to his inability to have children, and his Sfarim will be his progeny. So he has one sefer called Pokeid Akarim, God, the one who has allowed those who are unable to have children to give birth. His sefer on Chumash is called Pri Tzaddik. Pri, the peros, the offspring. The Hasidim named it that, the offspring of the Tzaddik, because he didn't have children. He has his Sfarim, and his Sfarim are really his Rusha. And in many ways, he lived a very challenging life. He had a very challenging first marriage, but he was a very wild thinker, a very interesting thinker. And what may be in one of his most well-known Torahs, he shares the following insight. It's Tzikas HaTzadik Os Aleph. Reishis Kinsasa Shel Adam, when we were taken out of Mitzrayim, and here's something to do with inspiration, not only the Shem Yishmuel idea of Yazir Atmanayim, do something, not only Eitam Henkin idea of strive for above and beyond, more than I thought was standard, but he says that when Klal Yisrael was taken out of Mitzrayim, we're taken out of Mitzrayim b'chipazon. When we left Egypt right away. There was no delay at all, hence the matzah. The bread didn't have time to leaven. Get out right away. Let's go. That's how you do it. Move quickly. Says Reb Tzadok, that is a lesson for all of us in our lives, that a person who wants to learn how to move, how to do something, how to accomplish, how to build, it always begins with b'chipazon, not to delay. Says Reb Tzadok, the third Torah on inspiration. Not Shemi Shmuel, Eitam Henkin. The third Torah inspiration is, don't delay. If you're inspired to do something, let's do it. You're inspired to do something, let's get on it. There was an amazing moment on Shabbos, Nancy's by Kolel, okay, which was following. On this Shabbos of Shabbos Chazon, all the different Torah at the meals were given by members of the Mechina program. This is like, speaking here is like a major game of bingo. So one of the boys spoke on Shabbos morning. He spoke Friday night in one of the dining rooms, and the family was reading in a different dining room, and it was so amazing. We made him repeat it the next day. It was unbelievable. He spoke about the challenge of him of keeping Shabbos. His family's not so supportive of it, or is moderately supportive. But where he lives, he's nowhere near a Shabbos observant community. He has to travel between an hour and 2 hours every Erev Shabbos if he's going to keep Shabbos. It requires him to borrow his mother's car, to get rides for his mother to anything else she'd want to go to over the next day. He has to find a place, someone that can put him up for Shabbos. And it's something which is, and he spoke, the theme of his talk was that appreciating how fortunate we are. It was amazingly powerful. It was powerful, Atrikach, that my 8-year-old daughter and 10-year-old son came over afterwards and said, "Abba, that was amazing." And if you can reach an 8-year-old and a 10, it was absolutely amazing. I was at a meeting today. One of the Rebbeim in Kol had an amazing idea. I don't think he knows about this yet, so we'll keep it, amongst friends. Which was, we should have road trips there. Why don't we, as a Kolel, during the year, have a bunch of times during the year, let's send out 7 or 8, post 10th, post 11th graders with a couple of Madrichim, and let's go make Shabbos for him. Let's do it. Let's do it and make it awesome for him. Can we get him a break from some of the Shabbos that are so hard? Can we do it? It was an idea of one of the Rebbeim. Tzaduk says, when you have an awesome idea, and I don't know how that's not an awesome idea. When you have an awesome idea, the one Torah he has, if you're inspired to do something, please don't delay. Please don't delay. Get on it right away. And the guys in Kol don't know about this idea yet. It hasn't, but it was something which the background's moving a little bit. Let's get this going. And the Rebbe who had the idea was that night already went over and said, I have an idea. Let's run this. I'll do it. I'll do the groundwork for it. This morning there was a meeting about it. How can we get this done? Chadu says, you're inspired, you have a great idea, get moving right away. Imagine, he says, how many great ideas were lost when the person says, I have a great idea, road trips. Noted. And you sit there for a while and nothing happens from it. And how different is it when you sit there and you say, I have a great idea, and you know what? I'm doing something. Shemi Shmuel, I'm going right away. Eitam Henkin, it is way above and beyond what anyone needs to do. It's way above and beyond. Is it not transformative? It's not transformative. It's very good. Let's get moving. There's a whole lot to do. A whole lot to do, and let's get moving. Let me end with just a maisa, so I can go past 9 o'clock. Let me just end with a maisa. I'm very fond of this story. It's a very simple story. I hope it's okay. It's a very beautiful one, at least in my mind. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe, Sher Zalman Leviat in Baal Tanya, had an office in the Beis Medrash that overlooked the school that his grandson went to. His grandson Menachem Mendel would one day become the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Menachem Mendel Schneerson, not the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, but the Tzemach Tzedek. And the Baal Tanya would sit over in Yair's office once in a while, and then he'd look at the window. Outside, you can imagine that sitting there in, where the Lubavitcher Chassidim were in the 1800s, the activities for the kids, there wasn't that much going on. The park system wasn't that great. There were no video games. There wasn't a whole lot going on. What did the kids do during their break time? There was a pillar in the middle of their chatzer, in the middle of their outdoors area. That's all there was. There was a pillar that was there. So what happened was, all the kids would play a game. And the game was, that we're going to try to climb to the top of the pillar. Okay, that's fun. It worked for a long time. It was age appropriate. I don't know. They were in third grade or so, trying to climb up. And one day the Baal Tanya, who's a very, very serious Jew, is sitting there and he's learning. And he hears like a real commotion. And he looks out the window. And he sees his grandson, Menachem Mendel, like jumping on top of the pillar. And all the kids going crazy all around. So the grandfather, the grandson looks up. He sees his grandfather, with very intense eyes, looking at him. And the grandfather says, come up. What's going on? So grandson comes up. And his grandfather asks, and the Baal Tanya says to little Menachem Mendel, says, what happened? Like, what's going on? He says, Zadie, you're not going to believe it. Every day we play this game, who can get to the top of the pillar. And today, I got to the top. So his grandfather says to him, how'd you do it? Like, what was your trick? He says, very, very simple. Very simple trick. Everyone else, when they would climb up, they would look down. And we looked down, they saw how far they were from the ground. They got terrified. They jumped. They froze. They didn't want to go any higher. When they saw how far they were from the ground, they just froze a little bit. My trick was I never looked down. I only looked up. And because I only looked up, I wasn't scared. I only looked up. I made my way all the way to the top of the pillar. And the grandfather said, I would love to give you a bracha, Menachem Mendel, that throughout your entire life in a process of growth, that you never look down. That you never look and get scared by how far, but you only look up. We only look to see what's the next step, what's the next thing I can do. How can I continue to build, continue to grow, continue to look forward, be able to continue to do whatever I can to be the best person I could possibly be. This is an amazingly, amazingly powerful summer. It's an amazingly powerful summer in a way where you can be moved and you can be inspired. But ultimately, what you do with that inspiration, how much you transform it to practical steps, how much we use it as a method or as a way to inspire us to do more than is just standard, to push ourselves to want to be even greater. How we're able to make the choice and say, I'm going to do something right away with it. I'm going to move right away and do whatever I can. But most importantly, how we make sure it is part of a journey. How we make sure it is part of a journey to continue to only look up. That our lives should be lives in which we continue to grow. Our lives should be lives in which all the inspiration that we feel, in whatever way we happen to feel it, is the kind of inspiration that we can learn from, we can channel, that we can use to be the greatest people that we could be. One of the greatest nechamas we can have after Tisha B'Av is when a person uses that inspiration to become even better. When a person uses that inspiration to try to do whatever they can to help rebuild a world that unfortunately is very much broken. It's been an absolute pleasure. We shall all be zoch to continue to grow, be inspired, and build and act based on that inspiration. Thank you very much.
I cried.